ॐ नमः श्रीयतिराजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे. वी विल् कण्टिन्यू डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि स्वामि विवेकानन्दस् ज्ञानयोग लेक्चर्, दि सिक्स्थ् लेक्चर्, दि एब्सल्यूट् एण्ड् दि मेनिफेस्टेशन्. इन् अवर् लास्ट् क्लास् वी डिस्कस्ड् ए वेरि important point. Let me first read from Swamiji. All through evolution, you find that the conquest of nature comes by change in the subject. Apply this to religion and morality, and you will find that the conquest of evil comes by the change in the subjective alone. That is how the Advaita system gets its whole force on the subjective side of man. To talk of evil and misery is nonsense, because they do not exist outside. If I am immune against all anger, I never feel angry. If I am proof against all hatred, I never feel hatred. This is therefore the process by which to achieve that conquest through the subjective. By perfecting the subjective, I may make bold to say that the only religion which preaches this is the Advaita system of philosophy. This is one of the most tremendous statements even today that has been issued by anyone until this time. Of course, this is a reiteration of what Advaita had been preaching since so many centuries. Let us analyze. Before that, let us take this statement in three parts. The first, the conquest of nature comes by change in the subject. Swamiji gave an illustration. So far as biological evolution is concerned, there is a small fish and it is pursued by larger prey. How does it escape this evil? Swamiji gave the example, the fish in course of time developed wings and flew away. The point here is that it is the change in the subject. The whole of biological evolution, if we analyze, there is a creature or even a species of creature, and it cannot survive. So what does it do? It mutates into a higher species capable of competing and surviving. And until human being comes, that's what really happens. But then, what about further evolution? Future evolution does not go beyond human birth. Human body is more than adequate to evolve further. But here evolution is not biological. It is inward and upward. The inward evolution, first stage, is intellectual or moral evolution. Usually, we segregate morality and intellectuality. Intellectuality means just merely understanding something through our intellect, but it brings about no change in our behavior. Whereas morality is a total changeover in our perception, in the training of the will, etc. But Hinduism or Vedanta goes the ultimate step and says moral evolution is only a mere platform from which to take off to the real evolution, which is called spiritual evolution, which is called the way to manifest the potentiality within each one of us. The second part is that Advaita system gets its whole force on the subjective side of man. This is the only philosophy, and here you must understand, unlike the Western philosophy, Indian philosophy is called Darshana. Darshana means direct experience, aparoksha anubhuti. It is not a brain's speculation, mere speculation, where intellectual cogitation goes on. A wholesale change takes place within the entire personality, biologically, intellectually, rationally, of course, morally. Advaita Vedanta's strongest point, you cannot change the world. Rationally, many people, even people who have highest intellect, they somehow feel if we change certain things in the outside, then the whole world becomes a heaven, a swargaloka, paradise on earth. It has never happened and it's not going to happen. And Sri Ramakrishna gives the telling example, the curly tail of a dog. Try to straighten it out. And you must try to straighten it out. it won't straighten out. But who will get straightened? The person who tries, he gets straightened out. That's what Advaita says, that you go on trying good to the world, nothing happens. But something happens within us. That is, a wholesale change takes place in this subject. Subject means each one of us. And this idea somehow stumbled, fell into the psychological realm, and now a whole new science has come to help people. It is called CBT, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And quite a number of people, they have gone through it. Now, one point I want to emphasize here. The moment I mention the word psychology, somehow it means that I am mad and I need to be admitted in the hospital, and that is the only way I can really get better. That concept, that psychology deals only with abnormal people, insane people, has changed long back, I would say. So the first time, it was only how to help people who are behaving abnormally. That was true. Like any definition of medical science. Medical science at first was dealing only with the subject how to help sick people. Later on, it started questioning itself, what is optimal health? Where a human being can fully manifest its potentiality. And now it has taken off. This is what preventive, you know, you will see extraordinary tapasya being done by people early in the morning, even though it is freezing temperature, jogging. What a wonderful word. Jogging, a jogger is called yogi. If you ask me, I would not be able to do it. But these people, because they want tremendous health, motivation, that is what makes these people perform tapasya. And that's what exactly makes a spiritual aspirant also perform tapasya, because his motivation is, instead of merely physical health, it is both moral as well as spiritual health. Now, this is the second point. Advaita always emphasizes the outside external world is not going to change because that is its nature. If you change the try to change the nature of the world, it would not be world any longer. Therefore, what is the solution? Change yourself. CBT. What does it change? Only the mind of the person. And how it changes, I will give a small hint at the end of this particular point. The third is even more bolder statement by Swamiji. The whole world is obsessed, as it were, with one point. The world is becoming worse and worse. Crime is increasing. Deception is increasing. People are becoming materialists. And they are becoming insane people, abnormal people, etc., etc., etc. Swamiji outright denies that statement. And here is the statement, in case you have forgotten. To talk of evil and misery is nonsense, because they do not exist outside. Tell me, how many of us believe this statement even now, that there is no evil person outside, there is nothing called evil outside? If it is not outside, where is it? It is inside. Why is it inside? Is there any reason, rationality about it? Yes, there is a rationality. I will come to that point very soon also. This is therefore the process by which to achieve that conquest of nature. It is a very important word used by Swami Vivekananda. You know, certain words bring certain associations. Conquest of nature means destroy the nature, dominate the nature, make it work what according to your will. This is what the Christian concept has come. God has created the whole world, then he created man, then he said to man, I have created this whole world for your enjoyment. You can do whatever you like. You kill animals, you kill people, you do whatever you like, but because it is all for your personal happiness. And it is very convenient, because that's what I want, that's what you want. Even if you do not admit it in this class, outside class you will admit it. But Swamiji says, such a thing is not going to happen. You change, the whole world will change. That is the only way we can change. Now the important question that comes is, am I denying that there is anything evil outside? From which point of view we are talking about? I dealt with this question almost at the beginning of these classes. What was the question? How did the infinite become finite? The answer is, no, it did not become. It is unrealistic, because if the infinite has not become finite, I would not be lecturing here and you would not be listening here. Because who would be there to speak or to listen? But the fact is, I am here, you are there. Advaita proposed a three-tier stages of reality. Paramarthika, Vyavaharika and Pratibhasika. We do not need to bother about Pratibhasika, but we can deal with, we must deal with Vyavaharika. When we put questions, from which level are we putting the questions? From the highest reality or from our reality? Always this question comes, why did God become this world or why did he create this world? If at all, funnily, you know, you go to God and say, why in brackets did you create this world? He blinks and says, did I create the world at all? Yes, I came from there. Did you come? Look and see where from you, show me where from you came. And if we are in the presence of God, we see that there is nothing there. Then you will say, oh, perhaps I was deluding myself. Thank you. That's all. That is the answer. This two-tier concept of reality is most important for us. We should not even question these kind of irrational things. But from our point of view, yes, there is good, there is evil, and we have to deal with that. And how do we deal with that? Not by denying it. Only a realized soul can say, there is no duality, there is no second. But we cannot say such a thing. Then what is our solution? The law of karma. If I am unhappy, it is not anybody outside. Notice very carefully what I am talking about. The moment we propose the law of karma, it means I am denying any evil outside. This is the evil created by me in my past. This is the solution for our present day problems. Is it true? At our level, it is absolutely true. So long as we are at this level, we have to accept that viewpoint. We have to behave accordingly. Now, let us not get too much confused by straying too far. So what was the third point? Therefore, the process by which to achieve that conquest through the subjective, by perfecting the subjective. Perfect the subjective. But let us perfect ourselves. Let us perfect our body, our mind, and our morality, our rationality. That is the only solution. Now, how to bring about this change? I gave you one example, that is the CBT. At present, it is the most popular therapy, how to help people become better people. It has nothing to do with insanity. Here is a person, he wants to bring out his or her potentiality, and he is unable to do that. But could it be done? Yes, it could be done. And the name for it is CBT. Remember? Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. What does it mean? Cognition means the change within ourselves, the change within our behavior. That therapy which makes our mind look at things, both at ourselves and external world, from a higher standpoint, then the whole thing changes. The next natural question that follows is, how can I move to a higher stage? That is where CBT comes in. And incidentally, I have to tell you, CBT can help people enormously. And it is nothing but spirituality in psychological terms. I'll give you one of the most important steps in CBT is called affirmation. What is an affirmation? That my mind is restless. Because my mind is restless, I am unable to think straightforward, rationally. So, doctor, can you help me? Yes, I can help you. Every morning you get up, breathe very deeply, slowly. What is the Sanskrit name for this? Pranayama, simple. It helps. That is what the modern doctors are telling. Then what is telling? Affirmation. What is the affirmation? I am calm. I am serene. They will tell you how to say that. Say, I am calm. I am serene. I am happy. I am positive. Say in a calm and quiet manner. And 15 times, 20 times, 50 times, 100 times. What is the name for that in Sanskrit? Japa. Whenever we are repeating God's name, that is supposed to bring about that change within us. But simply mechanically, you know, like Manipadme Hum, go on moving the wheels. That is why we are not getting the result. But if we just pay attention consciously with awareness, if we repeat, and if the results must follow, because every action must produce its reaction. What is the reaction? Change in our behavior. First, let me give you some examples of what Swamiji meant by change in the subjective. Means simply change within ourselves. The classical examples, two examples, Rajju Sarpa Bhranti. A man is walking, it was semi-darkness, and he saw something. He thought he saw a snake, and his heart started to beat, and he was unable to breathe properly, and he was frightened. All symptoms of fear had manifested. What is the remedy? You must always remember that these examples need deep thinking. So he is shouting, "Save me, a snake is about to attack me." Then the neighbor or somebody with better insight or with a torchlight, he comes forward and says, "Where is the snake?" "There. Always the snake is there." That is the fundamental mistake we commit. Where is the snake? "Here, inside." What is there is only a rope. So he lights the torch. What does this man see? Now, the snake disappeared or not? Where was the snake? Where did it come? It was in the brain, and when the light came, it disappeared there or here. It is the same. What remained there remains always. The moment the right knowledge of the rope came, you don't need to bring the knowledge of the rope. That is an entirely different subject. The moment we could remove the false knowledge of the snake and its effects have disappeared, and what we see is the rope, and then the entire fear, all the effects totally disappeared. False knowledge, false effects. Right knowledge, right effect. Now, where did this change take place? Only in the subject or in the object? In the subject. And the second classical example is Dashamastvamasi. You are the 10th man. Perhaps many of you know about it, but I will briefly tell you. 10 people wanted to go to a distant place. They had to wade through a huge river, and they all somehow reached the other side. They wanted to make sure that all 10 of them have reached safely. So one person aligned all the other people and stood in front of them and counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And he started weeping. "Where is the 10th man?" All the 10 people did exactly the same thing, and they were not counting themselves. This is the condition we are having. One wise person was going, and he saw that these 10 people were grieving because one of them was lost. He said, "What is the matter?" He found out. He said, he lined all of them out. Said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. When he came to the Dashamaha Tvamasi, you are the 10th. And with that, the fear has gone. So where did the change take place? A man was lost and then he was regained. He was there all the time. But the error was within the mind of the persons. We are not counting. Because who is the 10th man? Each one of us are the 10th man. We have lost something. And that's why we are searching outside. If from morning till evening, from birth to death, with every breath, we are searching. Where am I? That means, where is my happiness? We are searching. Where will you get? Somehow, with great punya phala, a great guru will come, and then he will point, "Tattvamasi, thou art that." And then the man gains the knowledge. "Yes, aham brahmasmi, I am the 10th, I am Brahman." And with that, all the effects of the samsara would disappear. Now, let me give real examples. You know, Buddha and the Angulimala. Anguli means fingers. Mala means garland. There was a ferocious robber. He used to live in a dense forest. And any travelers traveling that way, he would kill them, take out their fingers and make a garland of them and wear them. And travelers dare not travel that way. One day, Buddha had to pass through that way. And the villagers advised him, "Sir, please do not go that way. There is an evil person." Buddha said, "I know what to do." He traveled. And as predicted, he encountered Angulimala. Angulimala said, "I want to finish you up because your fingers are very beautiful now. They will be a valuable addition to my collection." Buddha said, "You want to kill me? Fine. But before that, before I die, I want you to do something." He said, "What is it?" Even the very presence of Buddha had brought about that change. Otherwise, do you think that somebody will hesitate a second? He would have killed immediately. But Buddha had that
presence in him, powerful presence. He asked, what should I do? I said, you know, you cut off a branch of this tree under which both of us are standing. And the man took out his sword and cut off quite a chunky bit of the branch. Buddha said, now put it back as it was. That man said, how is it possible? I have already killed it. You know, cutting of the branch means what? You killed it. It is not possible. Then Buddha said, that's what you have been doing. You know how to kill people, but you do not know how to give life to people. These words came from that realized soul, powerful person called Buddha. And at that time, the person was also ready to receive that. And instantaneously, these words acted like magic and became transformed. And then Buddha returned along with this man. He became a saint. Then naturally, for the first few days, people were frightened. Then they found out he was softer and sweeter than anything in this world. Even children could ride on his shoulders without fear, and they loved him. Now, the whole village was thinking, this is the greatest evil that we have encountered. And he was really evil from that point of view. But the moment the change came, what happened? He became a saint. Where did the change take place? Only within himself. The moment change took place within that person, so-called evil person, he was no more evil. He was a saint. Instantaneously, everybody could recognize that and became extremely transformed. The whole village, now they would trust only this man, not even their own family. So, real examples, Gopala Irma. She was supposed to be an illiterate woman, and she was encountering lot of troubles from the outside world. She was a child widow. What happened? She started practicing devotion to child Gopala. And what happened? Towards the end, she saw the whole universe as the manifestation of her Gopala. Where did the change come from? The whole world became Gopala, or her mind saw the world as Gopala? The right answer is, in reality, it is like the whole world is like a rope. Rope means what? Brahman. And who is seeing it as non-Brahman? We are seeing it. The change has come where? The world was never non-Brahman, never a snake. It was always a rope in this analogy. That is the truth. Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. Brahman, looked with names and forms, is what is called world. Brahman has not become something else. There is no place in Advaita Vedanta for a second, Dvitiya. There is an object called Brahman. There is another object called world. There is only one. Call it world, call it Brahman. Both are nothing but Brahman. Sarvam Vishnumayam Jagat. What is the first word in Vishnu Sahasranama? Vishvam. Who is Vishnu? Vishvam. The whole world. I am seeing whom? Vishnu. You are seeing whom? Vishnu. But we are not able to see the truth. That is why we see something different. That is why we are also suffering. Sri Ramakrishna himself, he saw a public woman. I am saying he saw a public woman. What was he saying? What did he see? The Divine Mother. In every woman, what was he seeing? Divine Mother. So now you apply the same example, like last example. It is not that he managed to see something which is not Divine Mother as Divine Mother. The lady was Divine Mother, the animal was Divine Mother, and he was not able to see until that time. Now, with a purified mind, he was able to see everything as Divine Mother. Now, how do we bring about this change? You know, all sadhana, our initiation, our mantra is supposed to bring about a change within. Where? Outside or inside? Only inside us. Let me first enumerate what is this CBT, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. I am just giving you the very essence of it, because that is an entirely different subject to be dealt separately. First of all, it is a training of the will. That means our way of looking at the world, that is called training of the will. And the first stage in the use of the will includes a goal, a purpose, intention, valuation, motivation, deliberation, consideration, weighing, decision, and practice. These are the steps. Now, that is a good meditation for you. Remember all those things. Sadhana, in Vedanta, we call it sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. Prepare the mind for receiving the truth. When will the truth be realized? This is the question. Whenever we ask the question, when do we realize God? Very common question. But you know what is the answer? When we are prepared to see God. When do we see everything as God? When we are ready to see everything as God. When we are prepared to see something as God, then we see only something as God. For example, you know, you enter into this shrine room. Daily example. You do not dare to spit or to do something unholy there, isn't it? But the moment you step out, God is only there. You don't dare. But here, no God is there. You can do whatever you like. Is it not what we are doing? That is why we call it shrine. But this is the first step. Just see that place as sacred, then extend it, then extend it, then extend it. Then it extends to the whole world. And the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna could really understand this point. Gopala Irma first saw Sri Ramakrishna as Gopal. Second, she saw the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna as Gopala. Then one day she went to Panihati to witness the chariot festival. That day, she started seeing her Gopala, not only the living beings, in everything. The chariot, the pullers of the chariot, the priests in the chariot, the image in the chariot, the people who came to see the chariot festival, living, non-living, the whole universe. She saw as her manifestation of her Gopala. From that day, she would address everybody as Gopala only. Because she was really seeing everything as her Gopala. Where did the change come from? Outside or inside? Inside. Now, I will put the same CBT training in simpler language. In this talk, I can only just give the outlines. First, prayojana. You decide for yourself, what is it exactly you want? Most people are very vague about it and they don't know what they want. Do you want God? Yes. And in the bucket list, where is he? 4,999. Devotees are classified into three categories. The third category is where they want God, but where is he God? 4,999. Third category. Second category, we want God. Yes. Where is he in the bucket list? First, God. Then 4,999. Other things also. What is the first category? Only one. In the bucket list. I want only God and nothing else. Slowly we have to progress. We have to update. You know, have you seen in the Heathrow Airport, the departure dates, have you seen updating themselves, going up? Like that we have to update our bucket list. Swami Vivekananda is talking about something very important. Advaita has twice saved India from materialism. Advaita. Advaita philosophy. When did it save? Twice. In the past. He should have said actually three times, but he was using the past tense. When? First as Buddha. What did Buddha preach according to Swami Vivekananda? Nothing but pure Advaita without taking the name of God. And when was the second time Advaita saved India? Through Shankaracharya, the great Shankaracharya. Let me read a little bit, then we can discuss. Buddha brought the Vedanta to light. Why am I emphasizing it? You know, many people have got many wrong opinions about Buddha. But he never talked about God. It is a godless religion. But he emphasized upon dharma and karma, both. What Swami Vivekananda is telling, and what did Sri Ramakrishna say about Buddha? Buddha bodhe bodh. He realized the truth. He was an incarnation of God. Buddha brought the Vedanta to light, gave it to the people and saved India. 1,000 years after his death, a similar state of things again prevailed. In that context, Swami Vivekananda is talking something extraordinary. He says, again, materialism came to the fore, taking the form of license with the higher classes and superstition with the lower. Then Shankaracharya arose and once more revivified the Vedanta philosophy. He made it a rationalistic philosophy. In the Upanishads, the arguments are often very obscure. By Buddha, the moral side of the philosophy was laid stress upon. And by Shankaracharya, the intellectual side. He worked out, rationalized, and placed before men the wonderful coherent system of Advaita. Swamiji concludes, materialism prevails in Europe today. You may pray for the salvation of the modern skeptics, but they do not yield. They want reason. The salvation of Europe depends upon a rationalistic religion and Advaita, the non-duality, the oneness, the idea of the impersonal God is the only religion that can have any hold on any intellectual people today. We want today that bright sun of intellectuality joined with the heart of Buddha, the wonderful infinite heart of love and mercy. This union will give us the highest philosophy. Science and religion will meet and shake hands. Poetry and philosophy will become friends. This will be the religion of the future. Just in passing, Swami Vivekananda had given a most stirring lecture in America. Is Vedanta the future religion? Most marvelous. And by Vedanta he means Advaita Vedanta. Swamiji says, through material science, we come to the same oneness. Already, scientists have established everything, living, non-living, comes out of what? Matter. Only what scientists call matter, Swamiji says, Vedanta calls it Brahman. What is the difference? Matter has no association with consciousness. Brahman is nothing but consciousness. That is the difference. Science today is telling us that all things are but the manifestation of one energy, which is the sum total of everything which exists, and the trend of humanity is towards freedom and not towards bondage. Another peculiarity of the Advaita system is that from its very start, it is non-destructive. This is one of the least recognized aspects of Advaita. Advaita is not at all destructive. Every form of dualism is destructive. For example, Vaishnavas quarrel with Shaktas, Shaktas quarrel with Shaivas, and dualists quarrel with non-dualists, and non-dualists quarrel with? No. Non-dualists do not quarrel because the non-dualism includes everything. They do not quarrel. Then how do they deal with dualists? Says, you be sincere in your faith, in your practice, and you will come to Advaita in course of time. And that is absolute fact. Then Swami Vivekananda says something very important. First I will give you the sutra and then I will proceed. Why should men be moral? Because through morality is the path towards freedom and immorality leads to bondage. This is a most wonderful subject for us to discuss. In which context Swamiji had issued this statement about morality? In the context of Buddha's teachings. As mentioned earlier, Buddha did not speak about God. What did he speak about? Two things he spoke about. One is about dharma. Another is about karma. Karma means the morality. It was the great Buddha who never cared for the dualist gods and who has been called an atheist and materialist, who yet was ready to give up his body for a poor lamb. Each word is a meaningful word. Buddha never cared for the dualist gods. By implication, what does it mean? He cared for the non-dualistic God. That is the supply we have to make. That man set in motion the highest moral ideas any nation can have. Whenever, wherever there is a moral code, it is a ray of light from that man. Now the question comes, why should we be moral? What did Buddha preach? Morality. Forget about God. Be moral. And morality will do everything for you. But he did not tell how it is going to solve our problem. Because we think, in our narrow understanding, morality is the end of man's goal. It is not the end. He was a Vedantin. He says, first take first step. And when you reach the end of the first step, automatically you will see the second step. Then you feel the urge to take the second step. Then the last step. Why should we be moral? This is one of the questions. Why is it necessary to question ourselves? Because there are certain reasons. Most people act morally for fear of the police or public. Example, in Mexico, one night, just as it was becoming night, the electricity has gone off in a big city. Thousands of people were walking in the streets. Absolute darkness. Do you know what they did? A person who would never even touch anything belonging to some other person in broad daylight. They all rushed, broke open the glass doors. Whatever they could take away, they have taken away. Here, a few years back, there was a ship was wrecked. I don't know whether you remember still. So many things were floating. The people were walking on the beach and the things started floating coming to the, don't ask me the address. What did people do? They would never do it in other circumstances. They all rushed, collected, you know, somebody toilet paper, some said this thing. One fellow got one motorcycle. You can't do much about the toilet paper. You can't say return it. Police caught hold of him and regretfully he had to return this motorbike. It happens anywhere. That means what? We do not have an inbuilt moral sense. It is all police faith. Could it be called morality? Because if it is not inbuilt, we only, you know, a person puts, my favorite example, you know, a person puts a gun behind you and then says, donate £100 to Vedanta Center. Who gets the merit? Who gets the punya? Many people act morally for fear of police, but most people act because of public opinion. They do not want to be seen, this fellow is an evil fellow, he steals, he robs, etc., etc. But if he could get away, he would be the first person to do it. Honesty is just best policy. Given the freedom, a large number of people would not hesitate to take recourse to dishonest, immoral or violent ways. A few years ago, when the police went on strike in Mexico, same thing had happened. Morality. We have an idea that morality is abstention from evil. But that is the very least bit of definition of morality. What is true morality or dharma? Morality means doing good. Love, kindness, sacrifice and goodness are natural human qualities, and there is an urge in everyone to express them. And we do it. We all love. We are kind. We care and we share. But with whom? Only within a narrow circle, that is to say within our own family, and it usually doesn't extend beyond the family. This is one side of the question. There is an urge. We want to love. This is an entirely different subject. But I am just briefly mentioning, each one of us have a tremendous, what we call, urge within each one of us. We want to love and we want to be loved. The whole world is struggling only to love and to be loved. And which one is stronger? To love or to be loved? To be loved? No. To love. But we fall victim to this slave, to this urge. We want to be loved without loving. When we want to be loved without loving, that is called selfishness. And when we love, even if we are not loved, that is called unselfishness. And most of us want to love. That's why we suffer so much. If love is there, it is a cure for everything in this world. But another factor of this is, we are blind people. We do not understand true morality. What does that mean? We find people often suffering in life, good people suffering in life, and cruel and selfish people thriving. We often find that our attempt to do good brings us sorrow, and the people whom we help prove to be ungrateful. Now the question comes, if this be the result, why should we be good? Why should we be moral? We would like to be. Supposing we are moral and that brings more happiness. And we are good, that brings also more happiness. Who will not be good? Who will not be moral? It is a fact. But there is a twist. The twist is, if I do something good and if I am moral now, I may not see the result now. I do not know when I am going to see the result. The result will be there. That is the law of dharma, law of karma. But the problem is, I want to see it in front of my eyes right now. And that's not going to happen. Somebody had done some great harm and you are unable to retaliate. What is your greatest wish? In front of your eyes, a truck would run over that person and you say, God is great. That's not going to happen. Yes, we do not express it, especially when you come to the Vedanta Center. But you wish somebody had done it to him without my intervention. Yeah, we have got a lot of these psychological problems, you know, we do not wish. If we want to be spiritual, we have to bring out all these things and say, am I really prepared to own all these devils and ready to throw them out? That is the only way to progress in life. This is the dilemma. We would wish to be moral, but we are not moral because of the immediate consequences we do not seem to really experience in front of our eyes. That is where faith in the scripture comes to our aid and says, the law of karma is inevitable. The results will be there. But when? Do they come delayed? No. They will come at the right time. And who is to decide what is the right time, right place, and the right way of presenting us that result. That's why Yama Dharma Raja. Yama's another name is what? Dharma Raja is the king of Dharma. Exactly he will give. That is called justice. We are unable to believe it. Belief in scripture means believe justice will be done, not delayed, at the right time, because the omniscient divine Lord, he knows exactly what to do, what not to do. Because of this situation, again the question arises, why should we be moral? Why should we do good? We are seeking the answer. And Vedas give the answer. What is the answer? The Vedic answer is that there is a moral order or law governing the universe called rhythm. It is called rhythm. The word rhythm comes from this word rhythm. You know, a balance. Something recurring again and again and again. Day ends, night comes. Night ends, day comes. Sun rises, sun sets. A plant grows from a seed, becomes a plant, again becomes a seed, and then it goes back. So season after season, year after year, things go exactly in the same way, in a cyclic manner. This understanding is called rhythm. And rhythm is the opposite idea of dharma. And they are like the two sides of a coin. If you believe in dharma, you believe in rhythm. If you believe in rhythm, you believe in dharma. Vedic answer is, by living in harmony with rhythm, can man attain peace and prosperity. Disharmony will lead to suffering. This is the reason why we should be moral. This is the answer, Vedic answer. But in course of time, this idea of rhythm has given way to a dangerous idea, fear of suffering. Why we are moral? Most Hindus are moral. Why? Not because they do not want to be immoral, but they fear the law of karma, suffering. You know, Hindus believe law of karma. It is going to come and catch me, and I am going to suffer from it too much. And that's what makes people very fearful. Fear of future consequences is what is making us reasonably moral. So the question, why should we be moral, pops up again. And most Indians would answer, for fear of karma. Not police, not public opinion, but fear of karma, suffering. Does that solve the problem? No. That's where the modern Buddha gives us the answer. Who is the modern Buddha? Swami Vivekananda. Here comes potential divinity of this soul. Why should we be moral? Why should we be good? Why should we be unselfish? Why should we do good? The question, why we should be moral, was answered by Swami Vivekananda. He believed that purity and goodness are the inherent characteristics of the soul, and morality is nothing but the assertion of this true nature. I read again, because it is like a mantra. Purity and goodness are inherent characteristics of every soul. Each soul is potentially divine. Therefore, each soul is potentially pure and good. So we are moral, we are good, we do good, not because of any external impulse or commandment, but it is because that's our very nature. And if we do not manifest our true nature, that is suffering. Non-manifestation of our true nature is equivalent to suffering. Morality is nothing but the assertion of one's own true nature. Swami Vivekananda, in one of his famous lectures on the real nature of the soul, Swamiji says, that's your nature. What is it? Potential divinity is your nature. Assert it. Manifest it. Not to become pure. You are pure already. You are not pure, but you are trying to be pure. No. You are pure. You are forgotten. You are trying to assert. How to become pure? Through morality. Through goodness. Through unselfishness. You are not to be perfect. You are perfect. Nature is like that screen which is hiding the reality beyond. Every good thought you think and every good act you do is simply tearing the veil as it were. And the purity, infinity, the God behind manifests itself more and more. Let me remind you a statement of Swamiji which you already know. We all already know. The whole of Vedanta is summarized by Swami Vivekananda in four sentences. What is the first one? Each soul is potentially divine. What is the second sentence? The goal is to manifest this divinity within by controlling nature, external and internal. What is the meaning of controlling the nature, external and internal? By becoming moral, by becoming pure, by becoming unselfish, by doing good, etc. How to become moral? How to become good? How to become unselfish? How to do good? Do this either by work, karma yoga, by worship, bhakti yoga, by psychic control, raja yoga, by philosophy, jnana yoga. Either by one or all and be free. What is the fourth sentence? This is the whole of religion. Doctrines, dogmas, books, churches, temples, all these are but secondary details. In these four sentences, Swami summed up the entire essence of Vedas, which is called Vedanta, entire essence of Upanishad, entire essence of Bhagavad Gita. We may also add entire essence of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. I mentioned once, you know, the entire essence of Vedas are called Upanishads. The entire essence of the Upanishads is Bhagavad Gita. If you have not read Vedas, read Upanishads. At least one Upanishad. Isavasya Upanishad. And if you not read Upanishad, read at least second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And if you have not read it, read the first chapter of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And if you have not read the first chapter of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, read these four sentences of Swami Vivekananda. And that is really, that's the essence of the entire Vedanta. Here is the answer. Why should a man be moral? Because purity is man's true nature, which is the Atma. Why should a man be do good? Because this Atman is one and indwells in all beings. When a person does something immoral or selfish, he ceases to be himself. He lowers his own dignity. He loses the glory of his own self. And nobody likes it. Morality is not a matter of fear, of compulsion, of subservience to an external force. It is simply a matter of being what one really is. It is simply radiating the true light of one's own soul all around, under all circumstances, at all times. The doctrine of the eternal, pure, self-luminous and infinite Atman was developed in no other culture in the world in its entirety. This is India's priceless gift to the mankind. And the man who broadcast this truth to the whole world was Swami Vivekananda. Who was Swami Vivekananda? One of the Saptarishis. He again came to proclaim the same ancient eternal truth for people like us. With this, the sixth talk of Swami Vivekananda, which is titled as The Absolute and the Manifestation, is over. If we have to summarize the essence of the sixth talk, it is this. There are no two things called as the Absolute and the world. They are one and the same. When we look at the Absolute through the glass of time, space and causation, or through the mind, or through names and forms, the Absolute appears to be two, God and the world. In fact, they are nothing but one. But for some peculiar reason, for which there is no answer why this happened, we happen to be on the other side of the glass. We happen to be on the other side of the glass, means in this world. What is the way? Now break that glass. That is called spiritual practice. How do we break? First, develop physical body to the optimum health. Then develop the intellect. Means intellect means not academic titles, but the ability to sift the right from the wrong, the good from the evil. This is called rationality, reason. Develop reason. Next, develop morality. Because reason invariably, inevitably leads us to the next step, which is, for my own good, I have to be rational, moral. Next to moral evolution comes real evolution, which is to know that there is no world, it is nothing but God, and that name of that God is Brahma. That is where Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. This is the essence of this sixth talk of Swami Vivekananda's Jnana Yoga. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.